Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Kristen Dreyer Kramer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Merry Christmas, everybody. This is the last show we've got before
ho, ho, ho.
The big fat guy comes down your chimney.
And it's not Kevin.
It won't be me. Unless you have cookies. I will be there for cookies.
It's true.
I'm very fond of cookies. But I'm
it might be a good idea not to set out cookies this year.
Set out, like,
the last thing you want is for Kevin to come down your chimney.
Set out like veggies and hummus. I won't show up at all. I won't show up. Maybe reindeers. I don't know. You'll get immigrants showing up in your room. I don't know.
Really?
That's what hummus is. It's a Middle Eastern thing, isn't it?
Do they come out for hummus? And
I don't know
veggies?
If they do. It's not like pushing a falafel cart or anything.
Do immigrants come down your chimney for that? I don't understand that.
I live in a weird area. So it happens.
Okay.
My wife likes hummus, and every time she eats it, I gotta tell people to leave.
Oh.
So it happens. But anyways, Merry Christmas to everyone. We are going to be talking about some movies this week. We got Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, which actually opened earlier this week. And we've got Walking with Dinosaurs in 3D, American Hustle, Saving Mr. Banks. We've got some news, good and bad, sad and happy, some DVDs and Blu-rays. But before we go on with that, here's how to get a hold of us. You can email us at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can visit us at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can reach us on voicemail by calling 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456.
You can just call us and say Merry Christmas, too. We'll take that.
Yeah, we'll take it. We'll play it after Christmas because, I mean, we're not going to have another.
You can call us to say Happy New Year.
That's right. Or Happy Valentine's Day. You can get ready and go. Groundhog's Day. Everything's coming up. Everyone's getting the big Groundhog Day celebration.
Plan ahead.
You can find me on Twitter, or you can go to find the show on Facebook at facebook.com/FGATM, and you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/Kevin Carr.
And I'm KDK Reviews.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. First up, we got to just give a little bit of a nod to the fade-out celebrities we have.
It was one very sad day.
They always say that deaths come in threes.
Go in threes.
And we got all three of them.
In one day.
Yeah. And technically, the dates were scattered, but they all were announced within, I think they were all announced within 12 hours of each other.
Yeah.
You had Peter O'Toole pass away on the 14th. And of course, everybody knows who Peter O'Toole is. And, Lawrence of Arabia, Supergirl, some huge movies that he was in. You also had Joan Fontaine, classic actress from Rebecca.
Yes, one of my favorite movies ever.
Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
She passed away on the 15th. Which is sad. I mean, she was 93, though.
Yeah, she was well in her 90s, yeah.
Not that it makes it any less sad, but yeah, she had a full life.
Yes.
And then you had Tom Laughlin. He passed away on the 12th, and he is the star of Billy Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen Billy Jack?
I haven't, nope.
He is about a barefoot karate-kicking guy who takes on bikers.
Mm-hmm.
Made in the 70s, or 60s, I think. The original Billy Jack, I think, was in the 60s, and then he did, several films.
Right, yeah.
Billy Jack Goes to Washington was one of them. And Tom Laughlin tried to go to Washington a couple times. He ran in all the presidential elections, from the 90s on. And he actually got, some votes in the primary in, Delaware or something like that in 2008.
Good for him.
So, yeah. So it's sad to see all these. It's always sad when celebrities die, especially even if they're ones that you haven't seen in a movie for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it reminds you of your own mortality. So, yeah. I mean, there were a lot of obituaries in the entertainment world last weekend.
Mm-hmm. It was a rough week.
So, fade out on Peter O'Toole, Joan Fontaine, and Tom Laughlin. Now, let's move on and have a fade out on Shia LaBeouf's career. This was an interesting thing. I don't know if anyone saw this outside of just sort of the film nerds like us, but apparently Shia LaBeouf, and this played at Cannes last year.
Apparently, yes.
A
which
short
is
film.
Crazy.
Yeah. A short film called, it was called HowardCantor.com, and it was about an internet critic.
Yes.
And how just pathetic, what a pathetic loser he is.
Pretty much, yeah.
Basically. And stars Jim Gaffigan is in it, and it's just him just sort of just needling the critics.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed at Cannes, did very well at Cannes, and then kind of disappeared, and then it showed up again this week.
Well, he decided to release it online on Monday.
Okay, that's what it was, yeah.
So that was the big thing. He made this big announcement that he's releasing his new short film online on Monday.
Everyone stampeded toward it, and all these critics were hurt. And I mean, I didn't care, because I'm just like,
I didn't even watch it. And I was like, well, I'll get to it eventually. Which is funny, because by the time I got to it, everything was gone. Except for a couple little ones that you can find somewhere.
Well, and what ended up happening is people then started digging and discovered that this is almost a word-for-word transcription of Daniel Clowes, a comic he wrote back in the 90s
yeah.
or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, word for word. I mean, I'm not talking like it was close.
No, it is exactly word for word.
It is closer from comic to Final Cut than most scripts are to Final Cut. If you've ever worked on a set or seen the script of a movie, and that stuff gets changed. This thing was, I mean, yeah, word for word, settings, characters. It wasn't just an inspiration. We just used it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, plagiarism. And yeah, I mean, okay, there's a whole legal definition, but also plagiarism basically means taking somebody else's stuff and passing it off as your own.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you can plagiarize in school, you're not going to get arrested. I mean, people plagiarize all the time in high school classes, and the teacher gives them an F and they move on.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an F
for Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and what's funny about it is, there are people out there defending Shia LaBeouf. People are going, well, you know, it was just – because he then apologized and he's like, well, it was kind of calling it imitation. I'm like, no, it's not imitation. It just using the words.
Okay. But the funniest part for me is that it was pointed out that his apology
yes.
was actually plagiarized from somewhere else on the internet.
From Tiger Woods. And all multiple people. And that's the thing. The other thing, then this is something people are missing, just the whole trying to pass off somebody else's ideas as your own. When you make an adaptation of something, he not only did it by not giving credit, because a lot of people say he did this and didn't give credit. He didn't get permission.
Right,
he,
and that's the thing.
From square one,
you
he
have
didn't
to have the rights to make something like this.
Yeah.
If it's based on somebody else's work, even if it's just based on somebody's idea,
yeah.
you need permission to use that.
Yeah, and now from a legal perspective, there's probably no money from this. There's no revenue that he's getting from it, so there's
right.
no real sort of financial way to come that Klaus can come after him.
But in the end, it just kind of makes him look like a jerk.
He's plagiarizing apologies. And then somebody pointed out on the internet later, they're like, and all this kind of like comes out on, it came out on like, what, BuzzFeed? Or was it Gawker?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Which is kind of for plagiarizing on its own.
Whatever.
But what's so hilarious about it is some people have now said, well, maybe he's just being meta. Maybe this is all like a big, almost Andy Kaufman style stunt.
What?
Because he's faking, because he's literally copying word from word apologies out there. And my thing is this is my theory. I just think Shia LaBeouf's not that smart.
Do you think he's doing a Joaquin Phoenix and making
no.
a movie about it?
I think
he's that smart.
Joaquin Phoenix. Let's leave him aside for
yeah,
a second.
That's a different story.
I think Shia LaBeouf is just kind of dumb. And when you're an actor,
yeah.
and there's nothing against actors. Some actors are great people. I know actors. I've worked with actors. But just because an actor says brilliant things in a movie or even just competent things in a movie does not mean that they put that together themselves. They have writers and directors who put all that words
Shia
literally
LaBeouf
into his
doesn't
mouth.
Even usually say competent things in movies.
No. So that's what's so bizarre about this. Anyways. Shia LaBeouf,
oh,
what is your problem?
What a crazy story.
Heavens to Betsy. All right, let's move on. We got a couple award film news. We talked last week about the OFCS Awards, which were the nominations. And they finally came in. It was big wins for 12 Years a Slave and Gravity.
12 Years a Slave, which is really interesting. I mean, 12 Years a Slave swept a lot of the major categories. And for me, it was a lot of surprises because there were a lot of things that I was like, really? Michael Fassbender for Best Supporting Actor?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, Lupita, what's her name? I don't even know how to say it.
I think she was phenomenal.
Yeah, she was
good. And I'm okay with that.
I would not be surprised if she wins the Oscar for
mm-hmm.
it. And Best Adapted Screenplay, okay. But, like, Gravity won for Best Director, so they split that,
right.
which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And Gravity also got Best Editing and Best Cinematography, very well deserved.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had stuff like Cate Blanchett for Blue Jasmine. These weren't terrible surprises
no.
or anything.
No.
You know, even
best
her.
Original screenplay, her,
yeah.
which makes sense.
Best film, not in a foreign language, Blue's the Warmest Color, which I finally watched and I really enjoyed. I thought it was a really good movie.
I thought it was a little heavy and depressing.
I thought Adele, and whatever her name is, was fantastic.
She is fantastic. Yeah. She is. I agree.
But I think what this does underscore, aside from just sort of like where it's grouped, is sort of the predictability of the award season this year. There's a handful of movies, and anyone can win. And
yep, there aren't a lot of surprises.
Called it. So, Anyways, we got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll hit a couple more awards things and talk about Anchorman. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer.
Hello.
We're talking award films, and there's been some nominations also that have come out, and another award winners.
Yes, there's a bunch going on.
We're going to be talking about a lot
award
of this
season.
Stuff over the next month or so. The one, I'm in the BFCA, and the there's also the Women's Film Critics Circle. Is that what it's called?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. There is, with the BFCA nominations for the Critics' Choice Awards, which airs in January on the 16th on CW. This one, nothing to, really to say, not a whole lot of stuff. There's in terms of the best picture list, we got American Hustle, Captain Phillips, Dallas Buyers Club, Gravity, Her, Inside Llewyn Davis, Nebraska, Saving Mr. Banks, 12 Years a Slave, The Wolf of Wall Street, and pretty much all the other nominations kind of fall down from that.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, the interesting thing with the BFCA is that not only do they have the best picture, but they also have different categories.
Yeah.
So there's best comedy, there's best sci-fi, mm-hmm. there's things like that. So there's a little bit of overlap, which gets a little confusing at
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
So American Hustle is nominated for best picture, but it's also nominated for best comedy.
Yeah.
And Gravity is nominated for best picture, but it's also nominated for best sci-fi. So there's a little bit of that in there. So
yeah, they go back and forth.
Yeah.
So that's not a whole lot. The one thing I am glad about is there's only like five or six movies I'm missing, so I have to just watch my screeners for
mm-hmm.
those. But and then you had, what is it, the Women's Film Critics Circle?
The Women's Film Critics Circle, yes. So we actually had our awards come out this week, and this is a kind of a different group. We don't do the standard awards, you know, the usual best picture, but, you know, best actress, and we do, but it's more of kind of a niche, which I think it's really interesting how they pick the awards and the things that they do. Mm-hmm. So we have categories like Best Movie About Women or, you know, Best Movie by a Woman, which,
okay.
you know, it's
sure.
it's one of those things that, yeah, okay. Hollywood is not an easy place for women.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I appreciate that they make a point of pointing out all of the women that are doing great things in Hollywood because,
mm-hmm.
you know, despite the fact that women were most of the directors back in the silent film days,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not happening as much. So this year, I'd say the biggest winner was probably Philomena.
Okay.
Which, you know, for best movie about women, it also got, I don't know, a couple of other special awards and things like that. Enough Said was a big winner. Before Midnight. There was one that
Sorry,
I had to kind of roll my eyes about. The best comedic actress of the year.
Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, for The Heat. Yes. So
that's nominated for BFCA stuff too. So,
yeah, they let me down a little bit there. But other than that, you know, it's a great awards group. So yeah, check them out online.
Cool. All right. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. Let's move on to reviews really quick. We've got Anchorman 2, The Legend
Oof.
Continues. Will Ferrell returns as the egomaniacal anchorman Ron Burgundy, who ushers in the 1980s by being chosen to report on a 24-hour news channel.
From deep in the hinterlands to the greatest metropolis on Earth, they came to reclaim the glory they once knew.
Welcome to GNN,
the global news network.
Aren't you the guy who lost his job to his wife?
Undaunted by the challenges they faced, they would not rest until they were number one again.
Yeah! We just done went and brought it.
Yes.
This one actually opened on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's had a couple days in the marketplace and, you know, a lot of highly anticipated things. But, you know, what was your take on it?
This was one I was so impressed in the beginning.
Okay.
The beginning of this film is comic genius.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
You know, I honestly, there were some times when I was caught so completely off guard that I was just blown away. And then it falls apart.
Yeah.
It completely goes off the rails.
Yeah.
And in the end, who knows what's going on with this movie?
Yeah.
You know, it sets up a great story. There's the whole, you know, he goes into this news channel. He's competing against this great newsman played by James Marsden who cannot keep a straight face.
No.
And
well, that's sort of his Well, that's his thing.
So it's a great setup. And you think, okay, well, you know, they've built this rivalry and this is great. The rivalry goes on for what, 45 minutes maybe?
Yeah.
Max? And then they throw in something completely different and completely flies off the rails.
I think what they did with this is they threw everything against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever stuck they used, whatever sort of kind of was falling off they used, then they picked stuff off the ground and used it. If you actually watch the trailer, you watch the full trailer, like the one we had, we just played, I actually had to cut around the stuff that wasn't in the movie. Because about half of the trailer is actually not even anywhere near the movie. And you can see, well, I see where that location is, but that's not in the film. There's a big dance number in the trailer that's not in the film.
Right.
And this kind of is sort of the similar what happened with the first Anchorman, which had a lot of stuff in there that wasn't in. They cut an entirely different movie from non-used footage, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And that's really how to do and that's good for a comedy because you have a lot of stuff to deal with and you can leave a lot of stuff out of there that's not funny. Part of it was there's some very funny moments and very hilarious moments. It just what the connective tissue where they're trying to put a story together just doesn't work.
Yeah, no.
Whereas the first movie's very straightforward.
And they could have. It could have been a cohesive story.
Yeah.
Somewhat. You know, but instead they just it just falls apart.
It's one that I wouldn't say it's terrible. I mean, it's not as good as the first. It's not as quotable as the first.
Mm-hmm.
Still very funny. I'm going to watch it again when it comes on DVD and Blu-ray. I mean, I love the first Anchorman. But in a lot of ways, this reminds me of Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, which was a very funny movie, but still just not as good as the original.
Yeah.
But I've seen it a dozen times. So there you go. Isaiah kind of rocks.
I'm kind of on the fence, but I'm going to stick with kind of rocks, too.
Okay. Well, that's cool. All right, let's move on to the next movie. And this one, they didn't actually, the studio didn't screen it for us, so we're going to just kind of breeze through it. This is Walking with Dinosaurs. In the late Cretaceous period, a group of dinosaurs must migrate with their herd and face a fearsome predator.
My dad was the guy that everyone looked up to, the protector of the herd. But I was the smallest.
Are you ready?
Hit me!
All right!
I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready now.
We're good.
I had no way of knowing that my whole world was about to change. One day, it was my turn.
If this sounds like Dinosaur...
I was just going to say.
...by Disney, that was like, what, a dozen years ago? There's a reason for it, because it's pretty much the exact same movie.
There you have it.
With John Leguizamo and Justin Long doing the voices. It runs 80
Which
minutes.
Which makes it even better.
Yeah. I don't know. When Dinosaur came out, you know, closer to the turn of the century, it was really impressive because, you know, full CGI dinosaurs actually shot it. They used real background plates and it was kind of amazing. Well, now in the years of Avatar and The Hobbit, it's less impressive, even if the animation is going to be 10 times better.
Yep.
And in 3D.
We'll see. It could be pretty cool. And it's made for kids. So,
yeah.
You know, take your kids who love dinosaurs to see it.
It's very clearly like The Land Before Time, the quote-unquote live-action version of it.
Right.
Even though it's not live-action. But it's photorealism. That's the thing with this. It's for families. And if you got little kids and they like the dinosaurs, because you watch the trailer and it's, you know, squeaky little cute dinosaurs.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. And I was talking with Ed Douglas, a friend of ours from ComingSoon.net, and he was like, well, I think it would have been more impressive if they didn't use the voices. I'm like, well, that's what's going to get people in the theaters.
Well, yeah, because if you don't use the voices, yeah, maybe it'll be more mature, but no kids are going to see it, and this is a movie for kids.
Kids will watch dinosaurs walking around for about 10 minutes, and
then
they're going to start walking around the theater themselves.
It's true.
But if they're doing goofy, silly things with Justin Long and John Leguizamo doing the voices, then they'll be hooked.
Yes.
So there we go. That one gets a preemptive suck because they didn't show it to us, and we had Christmas shopping to do, so we haven't seen it yet. We got to go to a break. When we come back, American Hustle and Saving Mr. Banks.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. We have a lot of movies to talk about this week.
Yep.
So let's just dive into the next one, shall we?
Yay.
Okay, the next one up is American Hustle. David O. Russell's follow-up to Silver Linings Playbook stars Christian Bale and Amy Adams as a couple of 70s con artists who are forced to work a con with the FBI in exchange for their freedom.
Hey, play your part.
Fine. You play your part.
Did you ever have to find a way to survive? And you knew your choices were bad, but you had to survive.
We were so successful for so long because we kept it just small enough.
If you're that successful, how come you wound up in this room with me right now? Taking orders from me.
This is Agent DeMasso placing $75,000 in this briefcase for Mayor Carmine Pulido.
Now, last year, Silver Linings Playbook.
I hated.
You hated this movie. And it was something that we talked about often, how much you hated this movie.
But, you know, Bradley Cooper did not have an awesome perm in this movie.
It's true.
So this one he does.
So, yeah, I was wondering now, after the whole Silver Linings Playbook kerfuffle of last year,
okay,
what did you think of the follow-up?
Well, first of all, it's the best superhero movie ever because it's got Batman in it. It's got Lois Lane. It's got Rocket Raccoon from Guardians of the Galaxy. It's got Hawkeye. And it's got Mystique from X-Men.
Not bad.
So it's like the greatest superhero movie, but the costumes are even better.
It's true.
Because they're all just these bizarre...
Seriously. Awesome costumes. And the hair does not get any better.
Oh, it's amazing.
Movie.
It is.
Seriously, like the opening scene is what? 5-10 minutes of just Christian Bale fixing his comb over. And it is awesome.
Yeah. I like this movie. It's one of those that I've been telling people, look, don't go in expecting Best of the Year because it's getting top level lists and stuff like that and nominations and awards. It's not the Best of the Year. I mean, it's good. It's not on my top 10. It's nowhere near my top 10.
It'll be in my top 10.
It was fine for what it was, and it's humorous. It does sort of turn in on itself a little bit at times, but like I mean, the acting's what does it. I mean, Christian Bale's great, doing his best Robert De Niro. And, I mean, he pretty much is Robert De Niro.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this movie is how, or at least about Christian Bale's performance, is how he gained 40 pounds for this role.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, Christian Bale's been known to lose a boatload of weight for movies. But he gained 40 pounds for this one.
I've done that twice. I just haven't lost it.
And not only that, but he walked with this slouch.
Mm-hmm.
That in the end, because he walked with this slouch for so long, he ended up herniating 2 discs in the process.
Oh, heavens.
So, yeah. That is sacrifice for his role.
Just like Torgo in Manos, Hands of Fate.
All right. There you go.
The guy who played Torgo, he wore his brace on backwards, and it ruined his gait, and he ended up getting addicted to pain pills.
Great story.
It's sort of like...
That does not happen to Christian Bale.
It's sort of like how Joaquin Phoenix sort of really adjusted his physical body for, what was it last year? The Master.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fun, and Jennifer Lawrence is fantastic in it.
She is amazing. Seriously, for me, she made the film.
She was great. And I mean, Amy Adams is good in it too, and a lot of it's the writing and what they're given. I mean, Hudson's given some great.
Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah.
Yeah. Not Jennifer Hudson. She's in other movies. But Jennifer Lawrence has been given some great lines in this
movie. And that's the thing. You know, she's a great actress on her own, but you put her in a David O. Russell movie, and there's just something about it. He just brings something out in her. He brings out in the crazy.
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
because she was in Silver Linings Playbook, and that
was
terrible.
And she won an Oscar for it, and she deserved
it. Not from me. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was fine. I'm not a huge David O. Russell fan. I mean, I obviously didn't like Silver Linings Playbook. I thought The Fighter was okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't think it was great. This is better than The Fighter. So, you know, probably my favorite one of his is I Heart Huckabees, which nobody seems to like.
There you go.
So,
no, I think, you know, the writing is clever. The plot is interesting. There are a few times when it gets a little complicated. And you're like, I don't even know what's going on anymore. But I don't care because everybody's got great hair.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the acting is great. There's humor and it's campy in 70s and it's a lot of fun.
Okay. I say it kind of rocks.
I'm going to say it rocks.
I'm assuming that's right. Yep. So let's move on. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Christian Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. What's up next?
All right. Up next, we have Saving Mr. Banks. Tom Hanks stars as Walt Disney in the true story of the grueling process of bringing Mary Poppins to the big screen.
Yay.
Yes.
She's here.
Well, Pamela Travers, you can't imagine how excited I am to finally meet you.
Would you mind? My name is Mrs. Travers, Mr. Disney.
Oh, Walt. Now, you got to call me Walt. 20 years ago, I made a promise to my daughters that I would make your Mary Poppins fly off the pages of your books. I promised them, Pam.
I know what he's going to do to her. She'll be cavorting and twinkling.
She can't be in the film unless you grant the rights.
Mary Poppins. We actually talked about Mary Poppins last week a little bit.
Yeah, because it came out on Blu-ray.
So, and it was perfectly timed because this is one of those movies that after you see this movie, you have to watch Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I dare anybody to go to this movie and not want to swing by the store and pick up a Blu-ray of Mary Poppins. Well, great marketing from Disney because they have I mean, if this was a terrible movie, it wouldn't work. But it's a really good movie, and you can stop by and go get Mary Poppins and watch it, and you're going to want to sing the songs because it has all the songs and then the Disney magic of that.
Oh yeah,
it's directed by John Lee Hancock, who did
The Blind Side. Yep.
He also did Hidalgo and was that he did that? I think he did those.
I don't know.
He's really kind of grown into that very, I guess I'm going to say schmaltzy because it's not schmaltzy, but that very warm-hearted, feel-good movie. Kind
you can
of
call
thing.
It warm-hearted. Yes.
Yeah. And his stuff's like 90% accurate. You know, there's always untold stories and stuff.
With biographies, it usually is the case that, you know, they're mostly accurate, but, you know, there are a few little things that you throw in there for the creative stuff.
Yeah. This is sugar. I mean, it is sugar. It's sugar-coated for the Disney brand, but that's okay.
But at the same time,
it's
not entirely sugar-coated because this isn't the fun, fluffy movie that a lot of people are expecting. And I've talked to a lot of people about that. They're like, oh, yeah, how's that movie? I'm like, it's a lot more dramatic than you might expect.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole storyline with P.L. Travers, the author of the Mary Poppins books, who's played by Emma Thompson. And she has this whole childhood that is not a happy childhood.
They flash back to the Lone Ranger middle of the movie?
It was sad. There are some pretty rough parts, and Colin Farrell he's great in it. But it is not a happy part of the movie.
No, but it's dramatic. I mean, it plays to the story.
Yeah.
And that's what works. I think the performances are great. Mm-hmm. Tom Hanks is Walt Disney. I mean, he doesn't quite look the part because it's not Walt Disney-ish. But he really embodies it. He embodies the charm.
And there's something so, charming and playful about it that even though you know, okay, it's not Walt Disney, but he gets on the screen and you just can't help but smile.
Yeah. And then there's Emma Thompson as P.L. Travers. Not a whole lot of people are familiar with her public persona.
Right.
So she could play it however.
Mm-hmm.
What's funny about it is, and this isn't a spoiler, but in the movie, one of the things that she demands is that they record all their sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a little bit of a side thing that you kind of plays through the movie. And at the credits, don't leave because the credits roll and they play an actual tape.
Right.
And I listen to them like, oh my God, that's the kind of person and I've known people like this. these grumpy old stodgy women.
Very prickly.
Yeah. Yes. And you're just like, and there's even they show pictures of her and you're like, because she's not as charming and pretty as Emma Thompson. You're like, oh, she looks like the grumpy old librarian. The first grade teacher that wrapped your knuckles with a yardstick.
You know, actually, another interesting tie-in with Saving Mr. Banks and the new Mary Poppins Blu-ray is that they've kind of built the features on Mary Poppins around this movie. So you can go back. They have, you know, some of the classic features from the old Mary Poppins DVD. Mm. And you can go back and see, like, the premiere, the big party that they had for Mary Poppins. And you do get a few glimpses of P.L. Travers in there. And she actually does a little interview. And you're like, oh, yeah, it's Emma Thompson.
That's who she is. Yeah.
And there is really an interesting feature with Jason Schwartzman and the remaining Sherman brother, who he plays.
Richard, I think.
It's Richard. And it's really interesting to see him talk about what really happened and how it played out and watching the movie.
What's neat about it, too, is and again, not to be overshadowed by Tom Hanks and Emma Thompson, but Jason Schwartzman and BJ Novak as the Sherman Brothers are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
They do a great job.
This cast really is great. I mean, Paul Giamatti.
Bradley fabulous. Whitford as the screenwriter. I mean, it's you really get the sense that they are recreating the Disney magic. And it feels so it's just charming enough to not be schmaltzy.
Yeah.
You know? If they went a little bit too far, it would be too schmaltzy, but they stop.
It's true.
They go up to the line and they stop. And that's the perfect way to do it. It's a very charming movie. Go see it.
It is.
I give it a rocks.
I say it rocks, too.
All right. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about box office. We're also going to be talking about DVDs, the famous DVD Roundup.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr.
And Walt Disney.
Yes. I'm not sure how to react to that.
I'm way too fat to play Walt Disney. I have a mustache, which apparently is a bone of contention with P.L. Travers.
Yeah, the facial hair. And, you know, the scruff. Yeah, I don't think you could play Walt Disney.
Walt Disney was scruffy, I'm sure, at sometimes. I'm sure he didn't come into the three-piece suit every single day. I'm sure he came in there and he's like, give me my coffee. Everyone has a bad day.
Yeah, I can imagine that maybe he'd just go to Disneyland on that day and then he'd be better.
Right, it's a small world ride.
Yeah.
Comes in with a chainsaw afterwards. He's like, there's another song.
If I hear that song one more time.
Oh, heavens. Anyways, let's talk about the box office.
Let's do that.
Last week I said The Hobbit would make $60 million. You said $80 million. We're kind of close.
Yeah.
The Hobbit made
the difference
$74. Not as much as the first one.
Nope.
It did not do as well in the midnight shows either. Actually, when they did the early tracking, it was like $8.8 million. Well, not midnight, but for the Thursday night shows. $8.8 million, which is lower than the last movie. And the initial, like, if you just kind of base it on that and you do multipliers from that, they were saying it could come in under 50 for the weekend. Mm-hmm. I think what it is just the people chomping at the bit to see The Hobbit.
Well, and last year, you know, it was really exciting because it was the first one. And, you know, Peter Jackson hadn't made one of these movies in a while. And we were going back to Middle Earth. It's very exciting. Yeah. It's like, you know, when you did all the Star Wars prequels. People are really excited about those.
There's fewer people dressing up as Gandalf in line.
It's true.
But, yeah, $74 million. It's going to have great legs. It's going to make $1 billion because it's got overseas gross. Mm-hmm. The Hobbit's going to be fine.
Don't worry about The Hobbit.
Yeah. They're not going to suddenly pull the third one from release next year.
It'll probably be released.
Still going to be.
Well, you know.
And plus you've got DVD.
Might as well, you know, after they've already made it and everything.
Well,
just release it.
If they also follow the pattern, they're going to have a release of the Blu-ray like in March or April, and then they're going to have another release of the extended edition in November or December, and then they're going to have that for the next movie, and then they're going to have the full box set of both types.
Yes.
So then what came in second was Frozen, which is still holding strong at $23 million.
Doing very well, and for good reason.
Yeah. It's at $165 million total. And then A Medea Christmas came in at $16 million. What's interesting about that is the lowest opening for a Medea movie ever.
Mm-hmm.
Even lower than Diary of a Mad Black Woman, which was his first one. So I'm wondering if the Medea brand is starting to sour a bit. It's also the third lowest Tyler Perry directed movie after Good Deeds and Daddy's Little Girls, which were notorious for not doing very well.
Yes.
For his brand.
Apparently, maybe just everybody else is too busy at Christmas that they just didn't want to go out and see the Medea Christmas movie.
True. I think there's also there's another explanation. A lot of times I think there's other things working on it. When it comes to sort of like a very targeted release to and his stuff's not even just a lot of people will marginalize and say, oh, that's for African American, that's a black release. And I'm like, no, it's not even that. It's for Christian based African American women. That's really his target market. So so it's even more narrow than within your typical you know, black film audience. Usually those do the best when they're opening in a vacuum. And you get stuff like Think Like a Man did extremely well. I think About Last Night, which is going to come out next year.
Okay.
And that's going to do very well because there's nothing really coming around it.
It's true.
Tyler Perry.
That helps.
This one came out on the heels of Black Nativity and Best Man Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So, and both kind of have the same market. So I think that it may have just diluted the audience too much.
Yeah. Yeah, the market. And this time of year, the market is oversaturated as it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just a lot going on right now.
Yep. So you just tick down the list, Hunger Games, Thor, Out of the Furnace. Boom, boom, boom. The Book Thief is at ninth. It's made $15 million so far, which isn't bad, actually, for such a weird, poorly released movie.
Yeah. I still don't get the release of that movie.
Yeah.
It kind of just squeaked out. And I even heard for a while, oh, no, they're bumping it to next year. And then all of a sudden it was out. I was like, oh,
yeah.
Well, Book Thief is out.
And then American Hustle and Saving Mr. Banks were both out last week in very limited markets. American Hustle in 6 theaters. Making $740,000, which is 123 average, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saving Mr. Banks didn't do as well in 15 theaters. It did over $400,000, which is 27,000 average. Still plenty good. I think that Saving Mr. Banks is going to have a wider appeal.
Yeah.
It's going to play better in Peoria, Illinois than you know, American Hustle will necessarily.
You
think? Yeah. That's just the way it is. So anyways, that's what it is. What do you think is going to win this weekend?
You know, this one's a tough one.
Okay.
But I'm still going to give it to Anchorman.
All right.
And I'm going to say 38.
All right. 38. And is that for the 3 day?
Yeah.
All right. I had written down 35.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Which is very close. There, I think part of it is going to be a little more front loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to. Part of the reason front-loaded because the fans are seeing it, and they had the whole super ticket.
Which is interesting because the screening that we went to was the super ticket,
yeah.
Which really, it came out 24 hours before the movie actually came out.
Yeah, not quite sure why anyone was spending three times the price.
Exactly. Well, like they got a poster.
Cardboard mustache.
It's true. And a mustache.
So.
But yeah, there were, you know, it was enough to, it wasn't a full theater, but there were still quite a few people who paid for it, and I was quite surprised.
I think the super ticket stuff is something that would they tried it. Paramount tried it with World War Z.
Mm-hmm.
They tried it with this, and it did well. But I think the super ticket type stuff will work best for massive movies, like when Star Wars 7 comes out.
Yeah, that would be huge.
Or Avengers. That's where you're going to sell it. You can do those super tickets for.
And even with something like this, if you did it a week early instead of a day early, because that's just it. Kind of cheap.
Yeah. So anyways, that's what's happening with Anchorman. I think it'll, but I also think it's front loaded because it's coming out on a rather crowded weekend.
Oh yeah.
Even though there's no real direct competition for it. It is sort of the only, it's not even a raunchy comedy because it's PG-13, but it's the only one that's of its kind out there.
It's true.
Especially Philomena, maybe. So I think it's gonna suffer a bit from just a heavy release schedule. And
well, yeah, it's December.
You know, it might have better legs than the original did in the summer. Well, the summer had good legs.
But yeah, but it didn't have a big opening at all. I mean, it was a lower opening. Yeah. And I think overall it only made 80-some million in theaters.
And almost nothing overseas.
Right.
Well, part of the thing with Anchorman is Will Ferrell was almost nobody at that time. He had done like Old School and stuff like that. Adam McKay, that was his first film.
Mm-hmm.
Judd Apatow was pretty much a TV guy.
Yeah. And, you know, since then, Steve Carell, Paul Rudd, all of these guys have actually kind of gone somewhere since then. So,
except David Koechner.
It's true.
Sorry, David Koechner.
Nah.
You're very funny on The Office, but oh well. So anyways, that's what I think is going to happen. And we'll see what happens as we roll into Christmas. But that is it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. Let's move on to the next segment, which we like to affectionately call the world famous
DVD Roundup.
Woo!
Woo!
There is a lot of stuff coming out this week. Kind of an alarming
amount
of stuff.
Well, you know, it's the week before Christmas. Everybody wants to squeeze in those releases so you can have those last minute Christmas gifts.
And next week there's nothing. There's like Insidious 2
in it. That's it.
So. Yeah. But yeah, we got Elysium, which was the not very good follow up to
District 9. Yeah.
With Matt Damon.
Yes.
There's Prisoners, which is heavier. That didn't get much award buzz, did it?
No, and that was one of those things when it was released back in September, that was the big thing. It was, everybody is going to love this movie, and it's going to be the greatest movie.
And it wasn't. There's Kick-Ass 2, which
also wasn't great.
Nobody cares about that one.
Another big hit of this year, The Lone Ranger.
I liked The Lone Ranger. It was okay for what it was. I mean, it was fun.
Yeah.
You know? And I think... Like I said, it ties well in with Saving Mr. Banks because they have virtually the exact same scene. They have a scene, I think it happens on the other side of the rail yard with the exact same woman who plays the love interest in Lone Ranger.
There you go.
It's kind of amazing the parallels between these two movies.
Well, you know, at Disney, they have to kind of, you know, save money where they can.
That's true.
Yeah.
Why? Let's say why. They've got the Avengers, Star Wars, and Marvel and everything.
Well, you know, everybody worries that they're going under. So, you know, the Lone Ranger flopped.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We save money where we can.
Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters is also out. That was okay. In One Direction, This Is Us, I'm sure. You know,
my favorite movie of the year.
I was throwing my panties at the video store the other day.
Great.
Because of that. The Family, which wasn't that good. But
I kind of liked it.
I'm going to watch it again on Blu-ray. Check it out. And then there's a couple TV shows. You got Burn Notice Season 7 and the whole series, which it's not that good of a season, but, you know, it ends. It's sort of, you're a completionist. There you go.
There you have it.
There's Family Guy Volume 12, which is, I don't know what season it is because it's all split up because of the volume. But this one also has the famous, no spoiler, I mean, I'm not going to give a spoiler, but some interesting things happen at the end of this season.
Well.
With one of the characters. Oh.
As if you didn't know already.
And Psych the Musical. They did a musical Christmas episode.
Yeah, I still haven't had a chance to watch it. It's in my DVR.
I had to retape it because the last 5 minutes were like cut off on the DVR because it was stupid. And then the singer of the week is The Sound of Music Live with Carrie Underwood. You know, this movie has more awkward moments than a Lindsay Lohan TV movie. It is really terrible. I actually watched the whole thing. I watched clips and it's painful. It is pain. It's the sound of mucus.
It's kind of what I've heard, yeah.
All right, that's it. We are done with the show. Anchorman 2, we both said kind of rocks. Walk with Dinosaur gets a preemptive suck. I said American Hustle kind of rocks, you said.
It rocks.
And then Saving Mr. Banks, both said rocks.
Yep.
All right, next week, we got Christmas movie releases, 47 Ronin, Believe, Grudge Match, Secret Life of Walter Mitty, and The Wolf of Wall Street.
See ya.